Jim Sarah, thank you, Sanjay. Currently, do you have any questions as things move to me? So for any of your friends, you may raise your hand to ask you questions directly, or you can send them to me via chat. So Bente, when we were waiting for question, I was wondering, you mentioned about, the three phases. So is it true that the last phase, the Noble Eightfold Path, basically, in order to reach this permanent release or abandonment of this clinging, it is actually during our daily life that we need to continue this practice in order to reach, I guess, at least the first stage of enlightenment?
Yeah, we can say so. Because as you know, at the beginning, the meditation appear like only limited to some extent. Say you have selected a particular time, you have a kind of a schedule, and according to that, you meditate. But later, as you are growing, so such schedule is actually not needed because your mindfulness practice now sort of pervaded throughout the day. Throughout the day, you are trying to be mindful. You still may have formal sitting and formal walking, but most of the time you are now being mindful. And more you are growing, now you have a sort of aspect of watching the mind throughout the day also. So you are engaged with various other activities, but at the same time, you are watching the mind. So as you watch the mind, what you are recognizing is in a way how mind reacts because of various defilements. Now you understand various defilements. So therefore, recognizing various defilements is not limited to sitting or walking, but we need to be able to recognize various defilements, as you said, during all the daily activities. And that actually happens with the practice. Though we start with walking, sitting, and etc., with some basics, it takes us to this type of whole day observation. It is not that we stop all the activities and simply watch the mind. Rather, while engaged in various activities, we are able to watch the mind. How mind reacts. Say you are talking with someone. So how your mind reacts? Are you getting angry? Are you becoming nervous? Are you sort of resisting what he or she is telling? So likewise, you can watch the mind how it is reacting during this conversation. So likewise, so all the daily activities while you are engaged with, we can observe how mind is responding, reacting, so that we can recognize various defilements, of course.
Oh, wow. So, Bente, it is not necessarily during a formal meditation that we reach a certain state of enlightenment.
Yes. Yeah.
It's more so that's helping us to establish our mindfulness so that we can apply it in every moment of our regular life, and that's where wisdom truly arises. Is that correct?
Exactly. So that is how the whole practice becomes a way of life. It is not a kind of a limited scope, a limited couple of hour practice. Rather, from the very moment you wake up till you go to sleep, so you are maintaining kind of a mindfulness. You are aware of what is really happening. Not only you about yourself, you can even understand how others are reacting, others are performing, because you have such awareness, and now you are deeply aware about yourself, about your own mind, how your own mind is reacting, what are the defilements arising, what are the shortcomings, and similarly you can apply such knowledge inferentially to someone else as well. So basically, understanding defilements is one of the very important aspects in Satipatthana practice.
Wow, okay, thank you, Bunting. So one of the questions that I received is, elements are simply a collection of energies as they may manifest as vibrations. So we cannot consider them as a verb or a noun, I correct?
Yeah, sure. I just want to explain it because verbs, nouns and all these things are we have made, man-made constructs. Languages, everything is man-made. And we are using these names even to name elements. So in order to, I mean, we are using various labels to in order to communicate about these elements. But in real, they are energies, as you said. There is no possibility of giving names or nouns or any of these. But just for our communication, easy understanding, so we have given various names, labels. Unfortunately, we get lost on these labels. We even struggle or quarrel based on these labels. But if we are able to go to the bottom, to the very basic fundamental level, so we can't use labels. You can't, so labels are not applicable. So that is what I also want to emphasize. So that's why, I mean, typically when we say a noun, now I am referring Jennifer. So Jennifer is a noun, and we get a perception of permanency because of a noun. So more and more the language has various nouns, and nouns are more prone to permanent notion. But actually it is impermanent. And if we say that Jennifer is a verb, would you like to accept it, Jennifer? Is Jennifer a noun or a verb?
It's either one.
Is Jennifer a noun or a verb? Now we have to change the English grammar. Now typically we give a name in order to distinctly recognize, and we consider it's a kind of a permanent thing. From the beginning to the end, you are Jennifer. It gives us a wrong notion of permanency. But at least if we say it's a sort of a verb, then we are having some sort of an impermanent perception that is a kind of a changing thing. It's a kind of an activity. So that's why I just want to say, so all these are not really nouns, but rather verbs. But as you said correctly, those are not even, we can't put those typical language constructs. Rather, they are energies. True.
Thank you, the follow-up question, the explanation to this concept of energy is excellent. Much merit to Swamin Wahansi. Sorry, is that a Sinhala word?
Yes.
Okay. I wonder how this energy concept allows to interaction and emotion.
Sorry. Could you repeat the last statement?
I feel like I'm maybe missing a verb. It says, I wonder how this energy concept allows to interaction and emotion. Maybe it allows to understand interactions and emotions.
I wonder how this energy concept allows to interactions and emotions. So basically, I mean, when we understand everything as in a sort of energies or say elements, so it is less prone to emotions, because emotions arise when we have individuality. So when suppose you are meeting with a loved one, so you immediately feel love. Suppose you are losing someone, immediately you feel sorrow, because you are having sort of individuality. So this is so and so. There are various labels. So we have so many other, say, past memories. So likewise, so it is quite, when we are in the conceptual world, all these emotions are likely to arise. But more we understand realistically, this is nothing but elements. So how elements can become permanent? How elements can give you permanent satisfaction? How elements can give you sort of a controllability? Now here in your body also elements, the other body also elements. Can you say that your body, these elements, got to behave in a particular manner? You can't command. So on such situation, you will understand how vulnerable they are, how transient, impermanent they are, non-governable they are, so that you may loosen sort of a reaction. You may loosen the possibility of getting too much emotional, because you understand it's not really that you or someone else is doing, but it's the nature. They have the nature to change. They have the nature to arise and pass away. You can't stop it. You simply have no control at all. They have their own causes and conditions. Accordingly, they are subjected to change. So this is the reality. So more and more you look at like that, so you may less become sorrowful. You may less cry. You may less lament, because you understand this is the nature. You can't stop it. So therefore, I feel that more understanding arise, so that actually helps to reduce sorrow and lamentation. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. So we are sorrowing and lamenting because we expect some sort of a permanency. We expect some sort of a control. I want this to happen in this way. I want this body to behave in this way. So likewise, we are trying to impose certain criteria. We like to impose certain behavior. But we don't have such control, because elements don't listen to us. Now we think that we have a kind of an agreement with these elements. This earth element should behave the way I like. This water element should behave the way I like. The air element should behave the way I like. Can you have such agreement? Impossible. So more you go to the deep levels, you will understand. So they have their own governing laws, which are beyond my control. So it is just because of our ignorance, we are expecting them to behave the way I want. But really they have their own laws of behavior, and they are simply subjected to those laws, which are beyond our control, so that we can become less emotional in a way. We can become really wise, and we can really patient, and we can endure what is going to happen. Yeah.
Thank you, Panchi. So the person had a follow-up, I guess, few statements. Isn't it an interaction of energies? Emotions are an interaction of energies. Then a new energy arises in the minds of emotionally involved.
Yeah, we can say so, but the term emotion usually come to the, say, mental aspect, and you are taking some sort of an incident to some higher level. At the very early stage, it is not kind of an emotion, it is kind of a, say, small reaction, you sense it. So say you are meeting someone, so immediately you feel some sort of a resentment, resistance. So if you start to grow on top of that, then you become really angry. But this whole thing is based on, in a way, kind of an ignorance. Because you immediately apply or attribute kind of a personality into the picture. So I am looking so and so. I am looking him. He is a bad person. He is my enemy. So likewise, we are attributing certain individuality into the picture. But suppose you are looking at this whole thing as elements. So your eyes are weaving a form. It is nothing but elements. Your ears are hearing some sound. It is nothing but elements. And what is physically available is also elements. If you have such kind of a energy perspective, elements perspective, can you be angry with elements? Can you be angry with energies? Impossible. So actually, on top of these fundamentals, we have developed so many concepts. So there we become emotional. There we become angry. There we become sort of lustful. Based on this ignorance. Yeah.
Thank you, Panchi. I'd like to invite Chita Devi to please ask your question.
Thank you. Now, Bhante, you described the characteristics of the four elements, and you brought it down to particles and energies and boundless and no identity of the person, but all of that we only can experience in meditation, not in daily life. Would you say that is correct?
Well, actually, we have to say that the yogi, the practitioner, has two modes. The conventional mode and this element mode. So, because otherwise you can't live the typical ordinary life. Because if you everywhere, if you are trying to go and apply this principle, then it is difficult to live. Say you are going to a supermarket and you have to name the parts. You have to see the, say, the menu. And you have to give to the cashier the notes and coins and everything. So there we have to accept that there's a value in these conventions. We have to live that conventional world. But knowingly, it is a convention. Knowingly, this we are using in order to facilitate the typical way of living. But in reality, they are sort of convention. They are labels. They are not real. So if we are able to have that kind of an attitude, then we may not take them so seriously. That's the point. So this kind of practice helps us to really touch that reality, really touch that deep understanding, so that we are confident what is available is nothing but elements. And it is sort of concepts are actually we are imposing on top of these fundamentals. And that also has a meaning, or that also has a benefit. So you can use that benefit, get that benefit, no harm. But in reality, it is kind of an illusion.
Yes, Manche, but the actual feeling that this body is just energy is an experience which you only experience during meditation. That's correct.
Actually, there are people who have very good, clear comprehension and concentration. Sometimes they even say, Bante, it is not only during meditation, even when I am walking, I feel these vibrations. And even when I am eating, I feel these vibrations. Even when I am sleeping or lying down, I feel these vibrations. When I am even talking with someone, I feel that body is constantly vibrating. So likewise, this is not that impossible, it may be possible. And again, it depends on the person. It is not that everybody has to have such kind of a very sensitive kind of a character. But actually, in actual terms, they are available to all of us. But we are not attuned to that every day, at every time. But certain people have that blessing, or we can't say whatever the skill, even to attune to it, even while they engage with various other activities. So, I mean, you understand this body constantly has to work, no? Constantly has to digest, constantly has to breathe, constantly the heart vibration has to happen. So these elements are constantly functioning. But we are ignorant about that because we are lost in the conventional world, and we consider those are quite important. Those are like very attractive. But the body is constantly working on the element level.
Yes, that is correct. Because after, when I go for a long retreat and come back, I find all these, the things very sensitive, as you mentioned. You can, suddenly, all these vibrations you feel even when you are in daily life. But of course, once you get into the routine, then we don't actually experience, at least I don't experience all that all the time, because very much into the conventional world then.
Yeah.
But you're right, Mamte. You can feel these things are when the whole system is attuned.
Exactly.
And in my case, if I go to a long retreat and come back, I do feel these things, but it's transient.
Exactly, yes.
And just one quick thing, you spoke about emotions, but we, even at a higher level, I believe people do feel, I mean, if they lose their parents, for instance.
Yes.
No, it is a very, there is great sorrow. I mean, you can work it out because of the understanding of the Dhamma, but still one does experience sorrow in a different way. Maybe not the conventional way.
Actually, it depends. I feel depending on the spiritual maturity of a person, because if he is completely developed and is able to completely uproot certain levels of defilements, then it is impossible to become sorrowful. Say, for example, I will just give you an example. There was one lady called Bandula Mallika during the Buddha's time. So she is the wife of one major called Bandula. So Bandula is the major of King Kosala in today's terms. I don't know the Senapati, you know?
Yes, Bandula.
Yes. So, and one occasion, and she also has 16 sons. They are also working to the king's army. And somehow, king has killed her husband, Bandula, as well as 16 children. And the news come to her while she was offering dana to monks. But she was not shocked. She was not lamenting. She was not crying. Because she was able to attain anagami. She is one of the beautiful examples of a lay woman who has attained anagami. And this non-returner level is free from sorrow and lamentation. Because you are free from that sensual lust, is no more with that person. Kamaraga, patiga, completely uprooted when one becomes a non-returner. So therefore, when parents pass away, whether one cries or not, it depends on the person's level of understanding. And I am
spiritual understanding.
Exactly. So, I mean, I am not meaning here that certain people, certain children are completely ignorant and not grateful to their parents. That because of that, they are not crying. I mean, that's a different story. But rather, even a very good person, if he is extremely spiritually developed, probably he may consider this. I mean, everything is subject to arising and passing away. I have no control. My parents, they too have the nature to die. So there is no point of crying, and there is no benefit of crying even for me or to them.
Thank you, Bhante. Yeah. Difficult, but of course, if you are very much deep, in very deep spiritual level, then it's different.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini to ask the next question.
Bhante, I do agree with Permasarnai Bhante. I do agree that you do feel these sensations. Sometimes I feel them a lot when I'm listening to Dhamma talks and things like that.
Yeah.
But my question originally was about Satipatthana being developed gradually, you know, as you, day to day sort of thing. But if you go the other method, I have been listening to something. That's why I'm trying to get the comparison from you.
Mm-hmm.
That if you go the other method by gaining jhana, I'm just been reading, that is why.
Right.
If you go the other method, achieve jhana, and then when you come out of it, you contemplate what happened and the stages, that's completely a different method, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand that. So that's why I'm asking you, Bhante.
Yes.
Can you compare the two and let me know?
Yeah. So, as you said, the jhanic practice, so first of all, one is attaining jhana. So, you are become absorbed to some sort of a mental aspect. Suppose you are able to have the anapanasati nimitta, kind of a sign, kind of a light. And you get absorbed to it. And you spend there, say, a couple of minutes or several time, long time. Now, you emerge from it. And now, after the emerging, you should be able to recognize either what are the jhana factors, how your mind being again and again applied to the primary object, and how you are observing that primary object, how you are feeling that primary object. the sign, and what are the perceptions, and how the piti, rupture coming and going. So likewise, this whole experience has to be looked at objectively. In a vipassana point of view, after you emerge from jhana.
Oh, I see.
Previously, you were absorbed to it. You have become one with it. But now you step back and look at the same thing in objective manner.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, so it is in a way little subtle in a way, because you need to, mostly it is the mental aspects you are watching.
But you have to emerge from the jhana in
definitely
order to come and play.
Definitely.
Occur.
Definitely.
Easily, right?
Yes, yes, definitely. Because while being in the jhana, you can't practice vipassana.
This person that I was listening to says that that is the only way you can reach enlightenment. And I was very confused. So, because I prefer that. The Satipatthana method, I was just trying to make, you know, read and understand different views.
Yeah.
So that is what...
Yes, I mean, actually telling that jhana is a must to attain enlightenment is a kind of a, I can say kind of a partial or not completely correct. I mean, either one can have jhana or not, one can attain enlightenment. That is one, I mean, say, it is not my statement, and this is a kind of a common statement by many, popular teachers, say, Mahasi Sayadu, San Sayadu, Pandita, as I said, say, Ajahn Sumedhu, Ajahn Chah, even last time we mentioned about this point. So basically,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
yes.
And also, about rebirth was also mm-hmm. talked about,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke. I was always under the impression that a rebirth takes place like a leech would. When the holding is released, as soon as it is released, another one is taken up.
Right.
But they talked about a Gandhava or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yes, yes. So accepted in the Theravada tradition, kind of an intermediate life is not accepted in Theravada tradition, but rather we can say it's a kind of an intermediate atma.
So consciousness exists without anything?
No, that is why. I mean, those are in a way kind of confusions taken from Mahayana, and some Mahayana traditions believe of such Gandhava state. Kind of an intermediate stage. And we can say, I mean, even if it is an intermediate stage, it's another type of life. Maybe a short time, short life, but still it's another type of life.
Okay. Like a ghost?
Something, maybe. Maybe. But I mean, it now, basically, now say someone removes or someone passes away in this life. Now, accordingly, there is some karma, there is continuous, there is karma potential available, and accordingly, there is a, sort of a grasping has happened. Now, immediately, he may get reborn at another level. So, that is
yes.
immediate. That is immediate. There is no kind of a gap. There is no, any gap. If they consider Gandhava, that is also another type of life. But there is no gap. After passing away, he became a ghost. Hungry ghost, maybe. Hungry ghost may be possible. Because, you know, the Petaloka is something that Buddha says is available. And if one is with less merit, probably one may be reborn as a Peta, as a hungry ghost.
But
that's another type of life.
Pardon me, Bhante. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
What they talked about was like the proper rebirth according to the person's karma. There was no place for him to go to. So he was in a Gandhava state until such a place was found for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how they talked about
Yes. So that is the interpretation typically given to this Gandhava state. But the Theravada basically reject it. Theravada does not accept that Gandhava state.
Actually, it doesn't matter too much for our
yes,
group business.
Exactly.
I'm wondering whether I should read anything like this or listen to others
I prefer you to maybe listen practice oriented things rather than too much onto the conceptual things, because those readings and those sermons actually confuse us, take us into more doubts, rather than clearing the path in the practical aspect. So they give a lot of theories, confusions, and you know, dogmatics things, and then it's very difficult to understand the Buddha's teaching, because Buddha's teaching is very practical and it helps us to understand ourselves. Why we suffer?
They quoted two sutras from the Majjhima Nikaya and some places also.
Mm-hmm.
For regarding the Gandharva, but I'm not going to read it. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
I think I will stop doing these readings or listening to it also.
Okay.
I just want to listen to stuff so that I can enhance my knowledge, but maybe too much is too much.
Yes.
Thank you.
Really. Yeah, yeah.
So the next question is, I can maintain mindfulness in walking and sitting meditation and even while I am exercising, but it is quite difficult in other day-to-day activities when there is no repetition. When I tried to keep body awareness and started watching mind at the same time, it works better. Is this a correct approach?
Yeah, no problem. Because if you are able to observe mind, no harm. Because that is how it is growing. Beginning, we may start with the body, but it paves the way to observe various feelings. As you grow, it paves the way to observe the mind. So it is true, if you are able to watch the mind, no harm, you can continue.
Thank you. So I'd like to invite Sonali to unmute yourself and ask the next question, please. Sonali Notek.
Hello, thank you. Sorry.
Yes.
You might have answered this question already, but I just have a quick question for you. I have been practicing for a while, and I, when thoughts come during the day, during daily activities, throughout the day, it seems as though I can kind of catch them as they arise, but on the other hand, I may not have be able to, I don't know, but it seems as though when I catch them, it's in the early stages of development. And typically I don't act on those, but I can see them coming. And the most frequently occurring emotion is jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it coming, and as soon as it comes, I kind of think, why is this coming again? And it's coming. And I kind of make a joke of it, or, you know.
Right.
But it seems as though it just comes up just a little bit, just to show its face, right, and then it disappears.
Right, right.
And I'm just wondering if you have any, this has been happening for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if you have any strategies that I can use.
Yeah, actually, you are applying the correct strategy. Basically, if we are able to recognize jealousy as jealousy, then we are not a victim of jealousy. Rather, we can laugh to it, and simply then it will, as you said, simply show its face and then it disappears. So this is how we are, in a way, weakening the defilement. So Buddha says, Janato bhikkave pasato asavanam khayam vadami. When only we see and know a defilement, then only we can able to uproot it slowly and slowly. I mean, slowly it may go away. Now, this is how we are removing that habit. So all these are, in a way, kind of deeply rooted habits. But as due to some reason, now they have come to the surface. But properly, we understood it. We haven't become a victim of that habit now. But we understood this is jealousy. We understand this is anger. We understand this as lust. So likewise, once we know at that very moment, this is the type of defilement. Same Buddha says, this is the proper practice, that you are knowing the defilement with your wisdom. Now you are not a victim. You are not getting deluded by that. As a result, it quickly disappears, and you are not promoting that defilement. You are not further strengthening that defilement so that it becomes weaker and weaker. So you are applying the proper method, correct method. Slowly, slowly it may disappear. we can't say when, we can't say how quickly, but this is the only method possible.
Sometimes when it happens during meditation, sometimes a thought comes and then I can kind of look into it really hard and figure out something. I guess I can just kind of, I feel like my whole body shakes as I go into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it and then I'm able to deal with it a little bit better. And when I come out of meditation, it's kind of gone.
Right.
But during daily life, it seems like it comes and goes, and I feel like if I could just go into it, if it was there for a little bit longer and I could go into it.
But it may not stay long, because when you are not promoting it, when you are not feeding it, it can't stay long, because we are the ones feeding defilements. When we stop feeding them, they will disappear automatically, quickly. Actually, we don't need to stay them longer. Rather, we can simply we can observe them objectively, and we can understand how they are behaving, and we don't need to invite them to stay longer either. But if you like, to analyze it, how it is working and all these things, and under kind of a controlled environment, while being very mindful, you can sort of observe it in many different ways in order to understand it fully. But when we are stopping feeding, it may quickly disappear.
Okay. So did you say that if it appears during my meditation, I should just observe it and then not pay too much attention to it?
I mean, observing it is a kind of a paying attention, but not deluded, by the way. So you, when say, for example, when this jealousy comes, suppose like this, there was no jealousy. Your mind was free from jealousy. Now there is jealousy arising. Now you understand the arising aspect of the jealousy. But you are not feeding it. So it is coming by on its own due to various other reasons. Now it is on the surface. You understand, okay, this is jealousy. You are not deluded by it and you are not distracted by it. Rather, you are face to face with it. You very well understand this is jealousy. And since you are not feeding it, since you are not deluded by it, now it will slowly disappear, because they have the nature to go away. They are not permanent things. All these defilements have the nature to come and go. And if we feed, then they will stay longer. Now, when they are arising, if you know it, when they are present, if you know it, and you stop feeding them, they will simply go. So likewise, we are weakening the defilement. So allow them to come. Basically, allow them to come, and you, without getting disturbed, you are equanimously watching it, objectively watching it, and as a result, by nature, it has the nature to go away, pass away. You don't need to struggle with it. You simply have the established mindfulness. You are in a fairly wise approach and you are watching it. And as a result, it will automatically will go away.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Manjay, do we have more time to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to invite Joseph Siddiqui to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Bhante.
Theravansanai.
I want to ask a question about my practice. You were talking about how we can reach a stage where the mind is free and there's a kind of a feeling, there's an unburdened mind. And in my own practice, now when I sit in the sitting posture, almost immediately, I go to a sort of an empty space where I don't feel the sensation of the breath. And at first, I kind of felt like I was going to choke, or there was a kind of a feeling of numbness. It was kind of a little dullness, or kind of like a muffledness. But I understood that this was normal and sort of became more confident with the lack of a sensation of breath. And so now that space, that sort of empty space, I'm becoming a little more familiar with it.
Correct.
And sort of have more of a sense of a spaciousness. And then I find maybe after about five minutes or so, it's hard to tell, maybe less, all of a sudden my eyes open. And when my eyes open, I feel sort of like a release of concentration. But the mindfulness is still there. I don't have any thoughts or anything running through my mind, although I can obviously see what's in front of me.
Right.
And it feels a little more kind of relaxing.
Correct.
And then I sort of make a conscious effort. I close my eyes again. And then within a few minutes, maybe I have an intermittent feeling of breath. But then the breath goes away, I feel relaxed, and I have the empty space in the mind. And this is a pretty new development, actually just today, honestly. And I was wondering what you would suggest, if this is there's a way to facilitate this, or how I should go about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so basically, as you move forward, so this kind of an empty space, spaciousness, unattached state of mind is possible. And once it is happening, you got to just be. So don't doubt about it. Don't be afraid of it. And don't get out of it. Rather, try to stay there for as long as possible for the time being. Because now only you are familiarizing with it. So this is, in a way, the natural nature of the mind, or this is the typical normal state of the mind. And on top of that, we have so much of defilements, so much of thoughts coming and going. Now, temporarily, we are able to remove that defilements. We are temporarily able to remove that wrapper so that we are able to touch that depth. So in that depth, what is available is kind of a pure awareness, kind of a spaciousness, kind of an emptiness. It is not defiled. So very pure, but it appears like kind of boring because it has no activities. So our defilements have colored the mind, but now that color has completely removed, so that it becomes completely pure, completely, say we say it's white, something like that. It is not really white, I'm just giving an example. So likewise, so it appears complete spaciousness, not attached with anything, not grasping anything, not holding anything, and free from any colors, and it is simple spaciousness, and simply be with that. And suppose you are able to be there for 5 minutes, next time try to be there for 10 minutes, next time try to be there for 15 minutes. Likewise, you have to become familiar with this state of mind, first of all. Actually, we are using this to further recognize some subtle defilements. So first of all, we need to well establish on this spaciousness of the mind. So at the moment, your duty is to expand it and to support it, to let it grow, so that you are able to immediately go there. You are not taking long time to establish there, but you can immediately go there. Now, even suppose you are going to a walking session, you can immediately establish there. So likewise, you got to fairly familiarize with this state.
Thank you,
Bhante.
Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome.
Thanks, Bhante. I believe this is the last question. And then someone asked whether they could share their experience on the elements, Bhante.
I didn't get the answer. How they want to show their experience or what?
So there's one more question.
Right.
And then there's another person that mentioned about wanting to share their own experience on the elements. And I didn't know if we have time for that too, Bhante.
Maybe then we'll take it on the next time. So on next Wednesday, so we'll have a kind of a discussion. And again, I like to remind you that There is an English retreat going on these days, conducted by Canberra group. Probably you can post your question to that. And actually, I am on Sri Lankan time at 9 a.m. I got to participate in that question and answer session. So you actually can post your question to that as well. So it will last till 1st of January. It's a 5-day virtual retreat. And that is another possibility. Okay then. Okay. Yeah. Okay
then. How do we participate in it?
Jennifer, don't you have that information with you?
Yes, I can share it.
Okay, great. So please pass that information to them so that if anyone likes, they can join.
Thank you,
Bhattu. Yeah. Okay, then I think we have spent about 1.5 hours. So most of you have participated and shared your experience, and we were in a good dialogue. So, and again, we have listened to the Buddha's teaching. So with all these accumulated merits, we share with all the past away relatives, all beings, and we wish everybody to become healthy and be free from suffering. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ఆకాశట్టా చ బుమ్మట్టా దేవానాగా మహిద్దికా పుణ్యంతం అనుమోదిత్వా చిరం రక్షంతు శాసనం. ఆకాశట్టా చ బుమ్మట్టా దేవానాగా మహిద్దికా పుణ్యంతం అనుమోదిత్వా చిరం రక్షంతు దేశనం. ఆకాశట్టా చ బుమ్మట్టా దేవానాగా మహిద్దికా పుణ్యంతం అనుమోదిత్వా చిరం రక్షంతు మం పరం. ఇదం వో జ్ఞాతీనాం హోతు సుఖితా హంతు జ్ఞాతయో. ఇదం వో జ్ఞాతీనాం హోతు సుఖితా హంతు జ్ఞాతయో. ఇదం వో జ్ఞాతీనాం హోతు సుఖితా హంతు జ్ఞాతయో. ఇమినా పుణ్యకమ్మేన మామే బాల సమాగమో సతం సమాగమో హోతు యావ నిబ్బాన పత్యా. ఇమినా పుణ్యకమ్మేన మామే బాల సమాగమో సతం సమాగమో హోతు యావ నిబ్బాన పత్యా. ఇమినా పుణ్యకమ్మేన మామే బాల సమాగమో సతం సమాగమో హోతు యావ నిబ్బాన పత్యా. సాధు సాధు సాధు.